Section 4, Two Great Struggles, Upcountry versus Lowcountry, England versus France. As you read, look for the conflicts between whites and Native Americans that led to the Cherokee War, class antagonisms that divided Lowcountry from Upcountry, how the formation of regulator groups helped establish a system of law and order for the whole colony, wars among the great European powers, especially the French and Indian War, that changed the power structure in North America, terms, regulators, Circuit Court Act of 1769, French and Indian War, Treaty of Paris of 1763. The population of the Midlands and Piedmont sections of South Carolina was growing rapidly in the 1750s and 1760s. This placed increased pressure on the area's small remaining Indian population, mostly of the Cherokee Nation. The growth also meant that the upcountry white population soon came to far outnumber the whites of the lowcountry, yet all the power and political control remained in the hands of coastal planters, merchants, and lawyers. This was not a situation the upcountry settlers could be satisfied with. At the same time these struggles were going on within South Carolina, a larger struggle was taking place on the North American continent. England's empire was competing with other empires for economic dominance and naval and military superiority. The British shared North America, not happily, with two other empires. The British competed with the Spanish and French for territory, trade, and alliances with Indian tribes. Each empire considered the others a threat to its power and prosperity. The Cherokee War. The Cherokee in western South Carolina and beyond were allied with the British, who promised to protect them from their Creek enemies and the French. The French traders competed with Carolina traders among the Indians between South Carolina and the Mississippi River. France was a military threat, especially after the beginning of the French and Indian War in 1754. Governor James Glenn had made great diplomatic efforts to keep the Cherokee as friendly allies. His efforts helped keep peace for several years. But the white settlers were crowding the Indians. White traders were abusing and cheating them and mistreating their women, bringing Cherokee anger to a boil. Governor Glenn's successor, Governor William Lyttelton, was less diplomatic, and the Cherokee War began. Horrible attacks and counterattacks ripped the Piedmont from 1759 to 1761. Many settlers were killed and their homesteads looted and burned. Indian villages were destroyed, and men, women, and children were slaughtered. British soldiers and local militiamen finally forced the Cherokee to make peace. The peace terms reestablished trade, gave the British rights to build forts where they wanted them, and established a boundary line between colonial settlers and the Cherokee. The northwestern corner of the colony was to be Cherokee territory. Upcountry versus Lowcountry. Control of South Carolina government by and for the wealthy class of Charlestown and the surrounding coastal area had been an accepted fact since the colony's founding in 1670. With the upcountry filling in and having the majority of the free population, lowcountry control seemed less and less fair to the newcomers on small farms in the upcountry. Class antagonisms arose, conflicts between the rich class and the not-so-rich classes. And these conflicts happened to be divided on a geographical basis as well. This east-west conflict between the more developed and richer east and the frontier and poorer west was a common class and sectional struggle in all the colonies. The conflict would continue for many decades as the nation expanded across the continent. The frontier Carolinians had several important complaints in the 1760s. First, the upcountry had very little representation in the Commons House. Second, their farmland, which produced only enough corn and livestock for a modest living, was taxed at the same rate as cash-producing coastal rice and indigo lands. Third, a part of their taxes was used to support the Anglican Church, though most of them were dissenters from the established church. Fourth, most of the money spent on defense was for coastal fortifications, not to protect the upcountry pioneers from Indians and French. Fifth, and most urgent, there was a lack of law enforcement and courts in the upcountry. The Regulators. Lawlessness and violence provided the immediate motivation for protest by the frontier settlers. There was only one provost marshal for all the upcountry. There were no courts. Imagine that you were a farmer in the Piedmont and you had a property dispute with a neighbor, or you accused someone of robbery. You would have to travel to Charlestown to present the case to a court. Such a long and dangerous trip was unlikely to happen. You would be without adequate protection of the law. Rogues and outlaws took advantage of this situation and robbed people, burned houses and barns, and abused many women in the lawless areas. After months of attacks and violence, the frontier settlers were getting no help from Charlestown. They took matters into their own hands and formed vigilante groups, people acting outside the law, trying to restore order and peace. They called themselves regulators. The regulators caught and punished those accused of criminal acts. Occasionally, they went too far, but they succeeded in destroying or driving out the criminal gangs. In doing this, they were in violation of the law themselves, but they were desperate. Finally, the authorities in Charlestown saw the light of justice, or perhaps they feared invasion of the city by these ruffian regulators, and acted to relieve the upcountry complaints. The Circuit Court Act of 1769 was a very important step in creating a system of law and order for the whole colony. The Act set up 6 new courts, in addition to the one already operating in Charlestown. The Low Country was to have 3 district courts, Charlestown, Beaufort, and Georgetown. The Upcountry was to have 4 district courts, Orangeburg, 96, Camden, and Cheraw. Each court district was to have a jail, a sheriff, and a courthouse where judges conducted trials. The regulators were pardoned, and for a time reasonable order was restored in the upcountry and more peaceful relations were established between lowcountry and upcountry. But there were other problems. The land tax issues were still unresolved. Also, the upcountry remained grossly underrepresented in the Commons House. The frontier folks felt inadequately protected from Indians. Sectional and class tensions were to be long-term. The Mighty Struggle for Empire. In the 18th century, the empires of Britain, France, and Spain were worldwide in scope. Each empire had colonies in Africa, Asia, and both Americas. Florida, Central America, most of South America, much of the American West, and many West Indian islands were parts of the Spanish Empire. The Spanish from St. Augustine were always considered an immediate threat to South Carolina. New Orleans and most of the territory in the middle of the continent and most of Canada belonged to France. The French were considered a threat to South Carolinians primarily because they had good relations with most Indian tribes and might urge them to attack the British colony. Britain, France, and Spain were the most powerful nations in Europe. Each one intended to be the richest and most dominant power by developing colonies all over the world. In the 18th century, there was to be battle royal for control of North America. The Wars for Empire. Between 1689 and 1763, there were 4 major wars among the great powers of Europe. They were fought both for supremacy in Europe and for control of North America. In those conflicts, Spain became weaker. By the mid-18th century, aggressive competition for control of North America had narrowed to Britain and France. The bloody showdown soon came. The fighting in America began in 1754. The war was called the French and Indian War because the British colonies were fighting the French and their Indian allies. Some Indian tribes, like the Catawba, allied with England, but most allied with France. The fighting in Europe started in 1756 and was called the Seven Years' War. It was the first truly global war in history. All the great powers of Europe were involved, and fighting took place in Europe, America, Africa, India, and the Philippines. It was a very expensive war, leaving Britain deeply in debt. The war ended with the Treaty of Paris of 1763. The British Empire emerged from the war as the mightiest empire on earth. France was stripped of all her territories in North America. Britain received the entire continent east of the Mississippi River, except for New Orleans. Spain controlled New Orleans and the territory west of the Mississippi, plus her colonies in Central and South America. For a while, white Carolinians were happy and proud to be a part of the triumphant British Empire. But that turned out to be a very brief time. In the next chapter, you will read about the political and economic consequences of the war, which led to great changes in the colonists' relations with the British government and with their Indian neighbors. Do you remember? 1. Define in sentence form, regulators, Circuit Court Act of 1769, French and Indian War. 2. What peace terms were forced upon the Cherokee after the conflicts of 1759 to 1761? 3. What was the outcome of the French and Indian War? The following is a chapter summary of Chapter 6. South Carolina was unique among the original 13 English colonies. It not only had more wealth than any other colony, it also had a more diverse population. These two factors had an impact on how and by whom the colony was governed. The wealthy plantation owners of the Lowcountry looked out for themselves because they were the office holders and the voters. Slavery was a very important part of South Carolina's wealth. Without slave labor, the rice and indigo crops would not have been so abundant. The fact that plantation slaves were worked very hard and not treated well during the first half of the 18th century resulted in slave rebellions. Although the rebellions did not result in freedom, they did sometimes bring about a little better treatment of slaves. Education was not as accessible in South Carolina as it was in the New England colonies, where towns were compact and usually included a school. In Lowcountry South Carolina, plantations were large and far apart, so the wealthy would hire tutors for their children and perhaps send them to school in England when they were older. This was not the case for those who lived in the upcountry. The families in that area could not afford to hire tutors, and it was not practical to build school buildings for only a few students. It finally came down to the upcountry people challenging the authorities in Charlestown to bring changes in the Carolina government. The differences between these two areas would continue through the American Revolution.